This is Illinois Edition. I'm Bill Wheelhouse. Michael Miller, a political scientist at the University of Illinois Springfield, has a book out called Subsidizing Democracy: How Public Funding Changes Elections and How Can It Work in the Future. His research looked at state-level public funding. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Before we get into some of the details, kind of define what public funding of an election is for us.
Broadly speaking, public funding is anytime money leaves the treasury of a state and it goes to fund parties or candidates. We see this in up to, you know, about half of the states have some kind of this. I wrote the book looking at programs in six states that are directly subsidizing candidates who are running for the state legislature.
And I know Arizona, Maine, and
Connecticut's in there. Those three states are the big ones because they fund fully the campaign. And so if you're a candidate running in those three states, you get all of the money that you need to run a campaign, and you agree not to raise or spend anything else. So we call that full funding. There are other states who only give you a little bit of the money that you need. You have to raise the rest on your own. And in 2008, when I was collecting data, those states were Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Hawaii.
As you talk about some of these states, now you get a little bit, tainted, tarnished, or a different view when you're looking at things here in Illinois. So I see legislative races that really, really run up the cost when it's a public funding. What kind of money are we talking?
Well, these states very often don't require a lot of money to win election. In Arizona, it's typical for a candidate to spend $30,000 to $40,000 on their campaign. Same is true in Connecticut. In Maine, you can still run for legislature with less than $5,000 because the districts are so small, and most of those campaigns are just door-to-door potlucks and things like that.
What impact does that public funding seem to have?
The approach that I took was thinking about it through the eyes of the candidates. If you don't have to raise money, what do you do with that time? So what I found was that candidates who take that full funding, or they essentially aren't raising any money from private sources at all, are spending 4 to 5 hours per week instead of raising money, they're talking to voters because they're completely redirecting that time into the retail and face-to-face politics. So if you kind of project that over the course of a campaign from March to November, what you have here in these states is hundreds or more likely thousands of interactions between candidates and voters that would not have occurred had the candidates been, you know, raising money and making calls instead. So we also see more people voting in these races due probably to more information or more interaction between them and the candidates.
Now, when it comes to these candidates, are they still able to accept donations from the general public?
It depends. The fully funded candidates cannot. That's part of the deal. So they give them the state gives them a spending cap and a subsidy. And you agree not only that you're not going to take money from interest groups or citizens, you're not going to put any of your own in either. So that's part of the deal.
So from a candidate's perspective, where you see this working well and you see a better turnout and even a more informed voting public, is that the candidate is outspending more time with the voters.
Yeah, that's the argument in the book, is that, you know, it's really about time, not money. We're shifting candidates' focus away from that money chase and back to where most people would say it belongs, which is, you know, representation and learning about the voters and really telling voters why they are the better candidate instead of being up on, you know, the air or concentrating on putting out all these mailers. So you're seeing a different kind of politics in these states in the aggregate, arguably more focused on individual voters and what we in political science would call high-quality interactions, those conversations where I'm learning about you and we're kind of determining together where we agree in the issues.
A couple of states you mentioned that were kind of partial funding, Minnesota, Wisconsin, they've had that reputation as we're good government states. How about these other states, the Arizona, the Connecticut, or the Maine, where it's significant?
Yeah, I think that's right. Minnesota and Wisconsin kind of have this progressive tradition, from the turn of the 20th century. And I think that those programs do come from that. It's worth noting that in 2010, Wisconsin did end its public funding program due to some budget problems that the state was having. So I would say that. But the fully funded states, the really big subsidies that I studied, Connecticut and Arizona, these laws were passed in direct response to some pretty major scandals in the state. In Arizona, in the early 1990s, there was something called ASCAM, where 10 to 12 legislators were caught selling their votes to casinos in exchange for looser gambling laws. And so this law was passed in Arizona by public initiative and was a massive statewide campaign. That's why these laws are called clean elections, because they often have to be sold to the voters. And who's going to vote against clean elections, right? The same thing happened in Connecticut. There was a bribery scandal with the governor of Connecticut in the early 2000s. And Connecticut is the only state where these laws have been put in place by the legislature. You had a Democratic legislature working with a Republican governor in that case to put these clean elections policy in place. So the Connecticut Assembly put its own public funding restrictions on itself.
Now, I know your focus was here on the impact of the candidates, and it's hard to necessarily immerse yourself in the individual political cultures of these states. To say a Connecticut or an Arizona, do each of these candidates have more of a independent power than maybe in Illinois, where they're kind of, they owe a lot to their legislative leader?
Yeah, leadership is weaker in Arizona especially, but you do have a very strong Republican Party in the legislature. So the party in government is pretty comparable, but the party in the electorate, the Speaker of the Arizona House, for instance, is not nearly as active in recruiting candidates and maintaining the election fortunes of his candidates as our Speaker is. And I think it's less to do with campaign finance laws, though, than the fact that Arizona has term limits. And so even the Speaker is limited to 4 legislative terms. And so you see these very interesting cases where they will term out in the House, run for the Senate, term out in the Senate, go back to the House. And so if you want to be a career politician in Arizona, you have to be a little bit more flexible. There are a number of different reforms, and they all work together. And that's one of the kind of difficulties about studying these things and worth bearing in mind.
And I keep bringing up Illinois in this conversation since we sit in the capital city. Do you see anything on the horizon that would even make that possible? I mean, I hear some things that would indicate to me no, just because we have strong centralized legislative leadership. We don't have the ability really for ballot initiatives from the citizens without extreme obstacles.
Yeah, historically, these things really do tend to come from a concerned group of citizens who are willing to put significant resources to the fight. If you think about the perspective of a legislator, not even a member of leadership, just a rank-and-file legislator, what's the interest in public funding? You're effectively saying, yes, I'm willing to give my challenger an easier way to get a lot more money to spend against me. And we do see that, you know, election margins in these publicly funded elections are tighter. The races are closer, even if incumbents don't lose at higher rates. So, you know, from a self-interest perspective, I would be amazed if the Illinois Assembly ever moved toward public funding here.
And you mentioned that this kind of can put people on an equal ground. And from what you've seen, you call them the neophytes, actually can fare well in this situation. A candidate without that much seasoning or knowledge of the political landscape.
Yeah, we call it in political science high-quality candidates, and it's one of these very difficult things to measure. But you know it when you see it, and someone who's got the aura of a strong challenger, and you think, that person can win. These programs, the fully funded programs in particular, they tend to vault people from private citizen to high-quality candidate because you have all of the resources you need to run a credible, challenging campaign. The mechanism for that is by altering the dynamics of the campaign finance market. And I think a lot of people don't think about campaign finance as existing in a market. And we look and we say, well, the candidates, the only ones who win, they're the ones who have all the money. But they get the money because they're good candidates. So, you know, here you have a program where, you know, if you're a social studies teacher and you've never really been to the party meetings or built the networks, you can still get the same amount of money that you would have had. So it does encourage these citizens from a wider swath to run, and they are running strong races, even in districts that are stacked against them.
As you look ahead and try to forecast, do you see any trend that would lead to this happening, these kind of public funding situations occurring in more states?
I think if there's a trend in public funding, it's toward incentivizing the participation of small donors. New York City, for instance, has a program where if a citizen gives a candidate for New York City office $125, they match that contribution 6-1. So you can turn a contribution of $125 into almost $1,000. And what we found, not me, but other political scientists have found that these programs really diversify the donor pool and encourage participation among a more racially diverse and more economically diverse subset of the population. So those tend to be, good for encouraging participation more than just in the voting sense. And people kind of buy in and feel like they have a stake. Those are becoming a lot more popular because they're seen as not interfering as much with the market dynamics of politics. And also they tend to be a little bit, they tend to face fewer constitutional challenges by opponents.
Obviously, there have been a couple of big constitutional rulings regarding campaign finance. Do those have a chilling effect or a warming effect on efforts at public funding?
Well, Citizens United has been, I would argue, a pretty big blow to programs like that one in Arizona that funds candidates to the full extent of the spending limit, because I might run for Arizona House and get my $35,000 check and run my campaign, but that there's nothing now to stop a corporation or any other interest group from coming in and spending $100,000 against me. So it's kind of an open question about how the new Wild West of campaign spending is going to impact participation and behavior among publicly funded candidates. But I think that's a big monkey wrench. There are also have been a Supreme Court case that challenged Arizona's law directly. That was a pretty technical case, but the Supreme Court effectively struck down part of the public funding program while leaving in place the ability of candidates to keep taking direct subsidies from the state.
What are you looking at next? What's your next foray?
Well, I have a book coming out in the spring that looks at the effects of the Citizens United ruling and really the reaction of people to this new campaign finance environment that we have. So the project is studying whether all this outside money is actually affecting the outcomes of election, and then, how people are looking at these ads and whether they even notice all the extra money. So we're looking forward to getting that one out, too.